Markley stood up, his long body sliding out of his chair effortlessly. "I was wondering," he said smoothly to John Backus, "we may be able to shorten this if we have time for a conference." There was a discussion off the record. Afterwards, as the judge's gavel banged, Backus made a pronouncement. "The hearing is adjourned to September 24th. September was 5 months away. 5 months. To put it bluntly, it was time that the girls, in all likelihood, probably didn't have. "The delay," cried Catherine Sharp, "was heartless and inhuman." But the law had spoken. Nothing further would be done until September. Chapter 30. The girls were devastated. Even Grace Fryer, who for so long had stayed incredibly strong, couldn't bear it. She flung her body down on the couch in her living room and gave herself up to the pent-up tears. Her mother tried to calm her, gently touching her daughter's metal-bound back, trying not to bruise her thin skin. "Grace," she said, "this is the first time you have failed to smile." But the girls could not believe what had happened. Markley had said it would hardly be worthwhile for him to begin his case with only half the day remaining, and thus the case had been postponed until there was sufficient time in the court calendar. The company intended to present approximately 30 expert witnesses. The serial story in the Orange Daily Courier that week was "Girl Alone." Well, all five dial painters truly felt that way. But they were not alone. They had Raymond Berry. Immediately, he fought the decision and, crucially, found two lawyers, Frank Bradner and Harvey Moore, who had a case scheduled for the end of May and were willing to give up their court slot so that the girls' case could be heard instead. Backus agreed at once to the new timing, and Berry let the women know the good news. The United States Radium Corporation, however, was not best pleased at Berry's intervention and said it would be impossible for them to proceed in May. Their experts were going abroad for several months and will not be back until after the summer. Berry was outraged. "I am sure you must agree," he wrote to Markley, "that there is a rather harsh irony in the situation which permits the victims of poisoning to languish and die because certain trained men must disport themselves in Europe." Despite the company's intransigence, in Berry's own words, he was far from finished in this fight. Aware that USRC's procrastination was arguably cynical, perhaps it wanted the girls to die before a verdict could be given, Berry now drew on the feeble health of his clients to fight their cause, asking four different doctors to sign to sworn statements. "These girls are all becoming progressively worse. It is very possible that all or some of these five girls may be dead by September 1928. It made for horrendous reading for the women. Humphreys reported that they were kept under a constant mental strain. Yet, it was the kind of move that Berry instinctively knew would get results. And he was right. For faced with this kind of injustice, the media were up in arms. Berry's ally, Walter Lippmann, rose to the occasion magnificently, writing in The World, We confidently assert that this is one of the most damnable travesties of justice that has ever come to our attention.